Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, is hosted by Annex Wealth Management, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Important information about the qualifications and business practices of Annex is available at annexwealth.com. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk. Please consult with a qualified fiduciary advisor about your specific situation. Annex Wealth Management is a local fee-only fiduciary providing investment, retirement, tax, and estate planning. Know the difference. Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hawkish vibes at the Fed, and the interest rate decision was unanimous. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Great to have you here. I'm Joe Kraus, Chief Economic Strategist. Dr. Brian Jacobson is here. Hey, Brian.
Hey, it's great to be here.
And CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. That's exactly right. You know, you think about doing a construction project, Brian, and sometimes you rip things right down to the studs. And yeah. I think that's what Kevin Warsh is going to do as the new chairman of the Federal Reserve. He's going to build it from the platform up, and It really started on Wednesday.
It did. It really started with that policy statement that came out at 2 o'clock Eastern Time, 1 o'clock Central Time. Complete rewrite. Like, I'd like to do those track changes feature. You can compare the documents. And there were only like a few words that overlapped between the previous one. The previous one was 341 words, and this new one, 130. So it was completely the opposite. It started with 12 to nothing decision, what they decided and why. The old ones were always the opposite. It kind of like built into what they decided and how many people agreed. There is, I think, some concern as well going in about what a divided Fed he was going to be inheriting from Chair Powell with all the dissents. And comes to find out, they actually were in agreement on a lot of things.
Right. And you think about what that really is going to intend. There was a lot of jawboning that used to happen. And we go all the way back to Alan Greenspan and how thick his bag was that he used to bring in, and that we were trying to read into that. The pendulum swung the entire way. And all of a sudden, they told you everything that they were thinking. And every governor on every CNBC outlet would tell you the same thing. So I think he's going to reinvent it, and that's probably a good thing. But at the end of the day, I often joke with you that you and I could be Fed chairs because we would just watch the 10-year Treasury. And here we are, and it's starting to come back down. Inflation's starting to come back down. Oil back to really pre-war oil prices
getting close.
WTI crude. And so I think the job should be become more apparent, but he's really going to start from the ground up.
Yeah, he is. And that summary of economic projections that they have, the, you like to call it the dart plot.
Right, throwing darts against the wall.
Which he kind of hinted that that's what it was. He's like, look, this is written in pencil with a gigantic eraser on it. So he's not providing his dot as far as this forward guidance about where he thinks policy might be, where
he's
inflation.
Dotless.
He is, yes, there you go. Comes to find out, somebody also forgot to put their dot for 2028.
So funny.
So it almost
forgot
like, well,
their dot.
That's right. Like, how seriously should you take this? He's been downplaying it. It's more about what he's saying. Let's look at the market, not have market participants worried about what does the data mean for the Fed so much as what does the data mean for the outlook for the economy. It used to always be that, oh, good news is bad news because good news means the Fed might spoil the party. And he made it pretty clear. He's like, look, I want market participants to just think about what does this mean for the economy and not whether or not the Fed is going to make a mistake.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, the old Fed used to say what is happening and is the economy heating up.
Mm-hmm.
But right now with AI, you're going to see, and I think this print, and you know better than I, this GDP print that we're going to get next quarter is going to be a big number.
Yeah.
But there's also efficiencies that are happening, and maybe it's not inflationary the way it used to be.
Yeah, that's the whole productivity argument. Right. If you have low unemployment, that doesn't automatically mean that it's going to cause more inflation, especially if that low unemployment means people are being more productive, they get paid more, and you actually can get price declines.
Right.
I mean, that was really the story for a lot of the period of 1950s through the 1960s, 1990s. You saw these decent productivity gains. And in fact, I loved what he said during the press conference. Somebody asked him about, well, with the low unemployment rate, aren't you worried about inflation staying higher, moving higher? He's like, I do not believe that there is a cruel trade-off between the labor market and inflation. And I think he's absolutely right, because the standard way of looking at it is it's always from what's called the demand side. Oh, if people are working, right, they're going to demand too many goods and services and drive up the prices. And his point is that, no, you have to think about the supply side as well.
Right.
If you've got technological innovation, it can actually drive down the cost of providing all of those goods and services.
We don't want to get too deep in it. I know you're the professor of economics, but demand push
yes,
is what it used mm-hmm. to be. You know, and when I heard him talking about that, and you'll think this is funny, I thought about this pickup ad that's going around now that said people used to say either you could work smarter or you could work harder. Why not both?
There you go.
Right, yeah. And that's exactly what this is. And the other thing that's happening, of course, is that there's been some movement on the Iran deal.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned, oil prices have come down severely, which mm-hmm. is a good thing. We're probably not going to see that at the pump quite yet, but after Labor Day and when the demand sure. starts to go down, you start to see that. But right now, the fact that we're going to get some type of deal and that oil prices are going to come back down and the straits are going to open will be good for consumers.
Yeah, and they have been feeling the pinch, of course. We've seen that in the retail sales data where they're filling the tank instead of their bellies,
yeah.
where gasoline station sales have been moving up pretty dramatically, and food service and drinking establishment, they've been paying a little bit of the price. Also,
so people are making a choice.
They do. Yeah. They have to make the choice with yeah. that budget. And the thing is, with this memorandum of understanding, the 60-day window, there's a lot of skepticism about will it stick, will it not? That's obviously above our pay grade. We don't know. And so we just go based on the data that we have. But with oil prices moving lower, Kuwait announcing that they're going to increase their production of oil by like 2 million barrels per day. You have the vessels moving through. Hopefully that does continue to at least move oil prices lower, if not stay where they are. Gasoline prices finally have broken below $4 per gallon on a nationwide average. If we get closer to like $3.50, $3.40, I think a lot of people are going to be talking about this reacceleration of the economy as opposed to fearing, you know, are we going to see recession risks?
And the last thing I do want to get to, because it was such huge news, was the IPO that we did talk about last week and how SpaceX has traded and the valuation, you know, exceeding some of the biggest names in the world. It gave a little bit back on mm-hmm. Thursday. Obviously, Friday, the markets were closed.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you wanted to get into it, it's not that far away. It's maybe 15% of where it came out.
It is. So it IPO'd, the initial public offering, it was at 135. It opened, the first trade was like 150. Then it went up to like 220.
Right.
I mean, it was going right. higher. That's right after the options started trading on it.
Oh.
And so kind of interesting about option players and investors.
So just real quick, so there were people who were buying the options,
yep.
which caused some other people to have to buy the stock,
yep.
which pushed the price up.
Exactly.
Now, it did come back down on Thursday, so we'll see what happens on Monday.
Yeah. And now, also SpaceX, they announced that they're going to be issuing $20 billion of bonds that are rated investment grade. It's lower investment grade, but yeah, a big company. They raised this money, more than $80 billion with the IPO. Now they're raising about $20 billion more with some investment grade bonds. They have big growth plans. We'll have to see if they can execute.
And folks, really, we talk about all of these things, but what's most important is how it affects your financial plan, how this affects your portfolio. And what we do on a daily basis across all of our branches is we sit down with folks and we go through this process to find out where you are and where you're trying to get to. And we're doing it as a fee-only fiduciary.
And if you aren't where you thought you would be with your portfolio, Annex, of course, follows the market trends on a daily basis. And we can help guide you through the numbers with an experienced team that is all in-house. Click the Get Started button at AnnexWealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Custom-tailored investment and retirement planning from a fee-only fiduciary. Know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. So conversations about money can feel confusing, especially when they involve decisions about retirement accounts. A rollover can be helpful, but only if you understand some of the common traps that people have fallen into. Talking with Tom Parks, Director of Retirement Plan Services at Annex, about some of the paths to avoid those traps and how to get a little guidance. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
You know, when people think about moving money from a workplace retirement plan, the process can seem simple. Just roll it over. But what is one of the most common rollover mistakes that catches people off guard sometimes?
I would say the most common mistake is not doing the rollover. So When you have left your job and you've got a 401k plan, you've got a balance there, I would say you should take the money with you. The question then becomes, where do you take it? Do you take it to your next employer or do you roll it into an IRA? I would say the biggest mistake people make is they're not thinking about that. And then from there, it cascades into a whole bunch of other specifics. But you got to start with that one, I would say, is the biggest one.
Well, some people feel pressure to immediately move their retirement savings when they leave a job. Do you have to do it like right away?
No, you do not. Okay, so I'm glad you asked that. So now here's where it's like, but Tom, you just said you were supposed to move the stuff. So you want to do it deliberately. When you leave, there are some thresholds where you're required to take it and not required to take it. So some magic numbers are $1,000, and now it used to be $5,000. It's been bumped up to $7,000. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that you have more than $7,000. If you do, then you are under no pressure at all, because the employers are by law not allowed to force you to take the money out over $7,000. If it's below that, then there is a little bit more of a time issue that you need to be mindful of. But it's not like house on fire. This needs to be done immediately. Usually, just in dealing with retirement plans, the record keeper needs to get notified of your termination date, and it starts this process. You're usually going to have a few months before you really need to get moving. And even at that point, you'll know, because they're going to send you a bunch of stuff that says, hey, if you don't take the money out, we're going to kick it out for you. So as long as you're paying attention, you're going to know. You do want to start thinking about, okay, what am I going to do? But, you know, get your ducks in a row with your new job and stuff like that. It's not like this has to be the first thing you're thinking of.
Many investors are unsure whether they should roll funds in an individual retirement account or into a plan with a new employer. What problems might people face if they choose the wrong type of account?
You know, it's not a question of right or wrong. It's just what's the best for you. I would say usually the balance matters. So the more money you have, the more useful an IRA is, because IRAs are nice because they're basically unencumbered. You can put money into an IRA and you can invest pretty much whatever you want to invest in. Whereas a 401k plan, if you're rolling it to your new employer's plan, you're now constrained by the lineup that they have. And that there's nothing wrong with that either. Depending on your balance, if you're talking, you know, not a ton of money, you're probably better off just rolling it into your new employer's plan, because you won't be able to take advantage of the investment benefits of an IRA with a smaller balance. The higher a balance goes, the more access you have to different investment types. I would also say, what type of person are you? If you're one of those set it, forget it people who's not super concerned about where the money's invested and the new lineup at your new employer is good enough, then maybe you just want to bring it with you over there because you're going to keep an eye on it because you're contributing to that new plan. We talk about this stuff broadly speaking, but then our wealth management team, when they're actually talking to people who are in these scenarios, they'll walk through and kind of get a feel for the person, get a feel for the specifics, and then kind of guide you from there. I always tell people, somebody needs to be watching your money. So if you're not going to do it, then you need somebody to do it for you. You know, you look at the number of jobs that people have in their careers these days, you might end up having lots of little piles of money all over the place. And believe it or not, people forget that they had an account somewhere. So I would say, you want to consolidate each time that you move from one job to the next. There are some considerations with Roth 401k. Just be mindful before you do a rollover of a Roth 401k. Be mindful of the long-term ramifications of that, because if you roll it to an IRA, one thing happens. If you roll it into a new 401k plan, you kind of retain some things that go on there. So just be aware of all that stuff. What is the best given scenario at the time with the rules that are in place at that time?
Get that guidance and thinking, well, my last job had a really good 401k plan, but my new job doesn't have a really good 401k plan.
Wait, what are you talking about, Joe? Our 401k
no,
plan is awesome. Hey,
here.
Take it easy.
But if somebody's listening and they're in that scenario, they had a good one, and now they don't have a good one, how should they be thinking?
Yeah, okay, so that's a great question. That's where then you start looking at the particulars, and that does happen. I mean, sometimes, unfortunately, there are 401k plans out there that just aren't that great, and usually it has to do with the investments that are in there, or maybe you went from a really large employer, you look at the scale, right. It was super low cost because there were billions of dollars in it, and now you're at a smaller employer. Nothing against a smaller employer, it's just, you know, economies of scale. So maybe it makes sense for you in that case to do something different. I would say, broadly speaking, just generally speaking, it usually makes sense once you leave an employer to bring that money with you. The question just becomes, am I rolling it into an IRA or am I rolling it into the new 401k? But I wouldn't do any of it without talking to somebody first who can give you some particular answers to questions that pertain to your specific situation.
Talking with Tom Parks, Director of Retirement Plan Services at Annex. And if you need a little guidance, talk to somebody like Tom and his team here at Annex. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Click Get Started at AnnexWealth.com.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, more in-person events coming up. Single in Retirement, Financial Planning Strategies, and our Women in Wealth Series events that are always well attended. Click an event, find one close to you at the top of the page at AnnexWealth.com to reserve your spot. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here. Let's talk about single in retirement, because that is a thing. You don't really plan for it, but sometimes it can happen suddenly, and there are unique financial challenges for those who age alone. Maybe you're doing it for the first time, but you should be prepared, and we can help.
Yeah, and there's a lot of different ways that people become single in retirement. If you think about it, it could be divorce. So you have the social aspect, the familial aspect. Also, are you suddenly now in multiple households? How do you divide assets? But then also, one of the most common ways, obviously, to be single in retirement is the passing of one spouse. There are lots of different things that happen. Obviously, the emotional trauma from that needs to be dealt with. But then in terms of from a financial planning perspective, suddenly the tax brackets that you're in can change rather abruptly. That can be a huge shock to people. Then also, what do you do in terms of like estate planning? There's portability elections, the way in which you file taxes. So there are lots of complications, and we are here to try to help you through that.
And admitting that you need the help can sometimes be a tough thing to deal with too. If somebody is in long-term care or if they're having some health crisis, it's never too early to start.
That's correct. You know, it's better to have a plan and then be able to execute on the plan. And one of the things that I have just learned over the years is that, like, in a time of crisis, people like to think that they're going to be able to make the rational decision and, you know, whatever it is that they're training. But we actually oftentimes fall back to our habits, and it's a little bit more emotional. It's also easier, I think, to open up to somebody like us, a professional, as opposed to a family member when you're going through some of those issues.
Clear numbers can help you make informed decisions, and that's what we can help you with here at Annex Wealth Management. Also, hey, another webinar that you love to do, the Instant Insight Series, Jobs and the Economic Outlook, especially with a new Fed chair and a hawkish vibe that we were talking about earlier. That's coming up July 2nd.
This one, I think, is going to be incredibly important because we've had a few months in a row of really strong job gains, and that has really, I think, shifted a lot of the Fed officials to being a little bit more hawkish, favoring rate hikes eventually as opposed to cuts. But will this one actually throw a wrench in the works? Because we have seen the labor market strong, but maybe it's cooling a little bit. So it's going to be really important July 2nd before the 4th of July holiday. Make sure you join us for that webinar.
Click events at AnnexWealth.com. Financial planning at every level, Annex Comprehensive Wealth, Annex Private Client, and Annex Ignite, 9 total locations. There's one near you. Another quick reminder, at our Brookfield headquarters, Single in Retirement. So financial planning strategies, this is coming up on Wednesday, June 24th, 6 to 7:30. Unique financial challenges for those who age alone, like we were just talking about, so we can help you identify resources and best practices around managing healthcare, housing, finances, and creating a support network. So that's this coming Wednesday. Reserve your spot. Space is limited. Click events at AnnexWealth.com. Glad you're here with us this morning. Time for news. Let's go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center.
Planning and investing insight from a fee-only fiduciary. You're listening to Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back. Happy birthday, America. You've seen it. The America 250th is coming up very soon. So we've been taking a look at the history and economics. So our chief economic strategist, Dr. Brian Jacobson at Annex Wealth Management, and our chief economic historian, Dr. Brian Jacobson, is here. Last time we looked at the 18 to 36, 1865 period with the railroads, bigger than AI in terms of investment. We looked at the Wildcat Banks, the greenback. This time, this is a period where one man controlled 90% of the nation's oil and another stopped a financial panic by locking the country's bankers in his private library, which doesn't seem like something you could do today.
No.
Until they coughed up the cash. This was capitalism with the gloves off. The most interesting part, though, as I was looking at this, after the Civil War, America industrialized at a staggering pace, the fastest sustained economic growth in the nation's history.
Yeah, and if you think about all the innovation that was just coming together all at once, you had steel, you had oil, you had the railroads, you had electricity, massive economic boom. But what we learned is that these booms oftentimes also come with massive inequality. So you think about one man owning 90% of the nation's oil refinery. That was John D. Rockefeller. A lot of people have probably heard about him. He ran Standard Oil. They ended up busting it up into multiple pieces from the government, but then they actually started bringing them back together over time. So kind of interesting there. At that point, you had the top 1% of the population in the United States owning about 45% of the nation's wealth. Just for some perspective, today people complain about inequality. Today it's about 30%. So this was a period of time in which you had really rapid growth, massive inequality, but also lots of innovation taking place.
And there was also a pre-Fed period that wasn't created by Congress until 1913.
That's right. And a lot of the reason for why it was formed was 1907. There was a financial panic. And so another big name a lot of people have heard of, J.P. Morgan. That's actually where J.P. Morgan Chase, the bank, where they trace their roots back there. He basically was so rich and so powerful, he got a bunch of bankers in the room together and said, look, we need to make this panic stop. And he got them to pony up the money. And so having this, what's called a lender of last resort. So when banks are under stress, who do they go to for support? That is the reason why 1913, Congress created the Federal Reserve.
And that's the period of 1865 to 1907, the Gilded Age with trusts, titans, and populist rage. And you can find our America 250th celebration of economic history on our Annex Wealth Management YouTube page. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Money Talk is straight talk from a local fee-only fiduciary. It's time to know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management and taking a look at how the U.S. federal gift tax works. What counts as a gift? How much can you give without filing paperwork? Because nobody really likes that. And the tax rates that kick in when you go beyond those limits. It might be especially useful for people who are planning generous moves with family, friends, or loved ones and want to make sure they get the tax side of things correct. So let's talk with Susie Lopez, wealth manager at Annex. Hi, Susie.
Hi there.
What exactly counts as a gift in the eyes of the tax folks?
A lot of things count as a gift. The easiest one is when someone gives you money and you aren't actually paying for anything. Easy example is parents oftentimes will give their kids cash, and that technically is a gift, but it's not all reportable every year. So a gift could be cash, it could be stock, it could be paying for things on their behalf that aren't related to education, health, maintenance, and support.
And that's where the planning and guidance might come in. And how much can you gift someone within a year without having to worry about filing? Because that changes all the time. Everybody's got a dollar amount in their head.
Yeah, for 2025 and for 2026, the amount that I could give you, Joe, $19,000, and I wouldn't have to report that, and you wouldn't have to report that. I can give anybody in the world $19,000. You could give everyone in the world $19,000, if able.
We want to be right? Susie's friend.
Yeah. Then I wouldn't have to report that on my tax return that I gave those gifts. You guys wouldn't have to report that on your tax return that you received those gifts. That's per person. So for married couples, that increases the amount that they can give without having to report. A married couple can give $38,000, $19,000 each to one person and not have to report that on their tax return.
And it goes into the lifetime gift tax exemption. What if you go over that amount? Does that count towards the lifetime?
The lifetime and the annual are different. So the lifetime gift exemption is the amount that you can give during your life or after you pass to your estate without actually owing any taxes. If I or anyone else gave someone $25,000 in 1 year, you would report $6,000 of a gift, whatever's over that lifetime exemption, and that $6,000 wouldn't cost you anything in taxes. You just have to say you did it, and it uses $6,000 of your $15 million allowable lifetime exemption.
When the actual tax rates do come into play, what does the rate table look like for something like that?
They're not great. They're more than your normal kind of ordinary income tax brackets that most people pay. 40% is pretty much the rate that we have people plan for because you fly through those smaller brackets and into that big one pretty quickly.
Big numbers and some common situations where people might unexpectedly trigger a gift return or fall into the rules without knowing it. When do those come into play?
Yeah. Think about all the different times people, parents, grandparents, whoever, aunts and uncles, give people in their family money, right? I think a lot of people are giving gifts and not even realizing that maybe they're doing it. When you put money into a 529 plan, that's a gift. Technically, paying for a wedding is considered a gift. Paying someone's credit card bills can be considered a gift. Being aware of gift giving, what it includes, what it doesn't include, how much you can do on an annual basis, because how many people have more than $15 million in their estate as a single person, $30 million if you're married? Does this impact everyone? No. Gifting impacts everyone, but does this gift tax impact everyone? Probably not. Mm-hmm. So if your estate's under $15 or $30 million, depending if you're single or filing jointly, give away. Just know that you might have to report that you gave the gift. And ultimately what that is, it's just an extra form on your tax return.
You got to do it right.
Yeah. Play by the rules.
Yeah. Play by the rules. And what are some proactive action steps people could take if they think that gifting might be in their future so they can feel confident maybe about not getting any surprises?
Yeah. It's something that we talk about with our clients all the time is looking at their financial plan, projecting ahead. What does your estate look like? Not only today, but maybe in 20, 30 years down the road, would your estate maybe be subject to these taxes? And how do we avoid that? One of the ways we can help people do that is by gifting within this annual exclusion amount every year over time, getting money out of their estate, moving it to whoever they're trying to give their estate to in advance. Now there's some estate planning work to do there. You're putting it in a trust or you give it to them directly. And making sure that you're filing that gift tax on an annual basis. I'd say another one I see a lot. A lot of people will help their kids or somebody in their family member buy a home, right? And so if a parent gives a kid money to make a down payment on the first purchase of their home, if they're giving them more than an annual exemption amount,
they might need more than 19.
For sure. You know, that's technically a gift. You just have to say, hey, we gave a gift. You report the gift. It's not taxable to anybody. It's just, you got to say you did it. The other thing I've seen people do is if a parent, mom and dad own the house, kid wants to live in it, maybe rent to own situation, whatever it might be, but they don't want their kid to pay the mortgage interest. You can forgive the interest that would be due up to the annual exemption amount and not have to report that too. So a lot of people are doing some of these things. I think maybe they don't even realize that's technically a gift. So just being mindful of what counts, what's the dollar amount that you're forgiving or giving on an annual basis to make sure you're reporting it correctly.
Be able to say no.
Yeah,
you got to do it the right way. But we do want to see our clients at Annex smile when they realize that they're able to gift.
For sure.
And also realize that they're doing it the right way. So Susie Lopez, thank you very much for being here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Wealth manager at Annex. Take the first step. Click the Get Started button, annexwealth.com.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, thank you for having us on today. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. This show, of course, also a podcast and ready for you at the top of the hour. As soon as the show is over, you can download it wherever you get your podcasts. Another way to get our education that is always free is with the Axiom. That is our newsletter with our week in review video from this show in your email on Sunday morning, along with what we're watching for the week ahead. Just search Annex Axiom. Other podcasts too, like The Wealthiest, Ideas, Strategies, and Decisions of the Wealthy in America, and the SWOT podcast, Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, and Threats of the Current Market, with a new episode first thing Monday morning, and the new Women in Wealth podcast featuring special guests to help empower women through genuine conversations. Some great guests with that one recently. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here, and CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Thanks, Joe. You know, July 4th is coming up pretty quickly, and a lot of historic things are going to happen, but there was a number of Corvette owners who got together and formed an American flag. I thought that was pretty cool, and You can find that, I'm sure, if you're looking for that picture. But, you know, talking about cars, you told me a used car warning light has gone on.
It has a little bit. This past week, it was really fascinating to see the stock market reaction for CarMax and Carvana. Now, full disclosure, I bought my used car through Carvana a few years ago. Really interesting experience, right? So these are two companies that have been trying to almost kind of shake up the used car market. And with CarMax, they announced that, you know, one of the things with some of this growth is credit quality, right? So it's not just about selling the car, but how are they financed? And that's what really investors, I think, kind of looked at this past week was what's the credit quality? And some of the statistics that we get from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, they talk about new delinquencies for different categories of loans. And we have seen that pick up for used cars. So something to really monitor, especially higher gasoline prices, people having to make some tough choices. But also interestingly, related to the story, Carvana, they purchased a few dealerships where they might try to get into like the new car market as well. So it really cool how some of these things change.
So those used car warning light is really because consumers were under stress, especially the lower income ones. You know, they're having a tough time getting it financed.
Yep.
The costs were higher. Interest rates were higher. I see that. And of course, you know, there's the new cars that are being watched as well. We saw that BMW's margins have shrunk just a little bit.
Just a smidge. Yeah. So BMW, the German car maker, they said that for this year, their margins might be a mere 1%, which is like, okay.
You get a bed for 1% margin.
Right? No kidding. So it's new cars. And some of this, you know, is it unique to them as far as how they're executing the models that they have? You probably heard a couple weeks ago about, was it Ferrari or Lamborghini, where they had an electric vehicle, and it wasn't really all that
well
received.
Well, you have both. Don't you have a Ferrari and a Lamborghini?
I like to diversify.
That's a good thinking,
So, no.
Joe has a driver.
Right, for my Camry.
There you go. With the new car market, so the big challenge for them is, number one, what they manufacture in Europe and then try to export to China. And we have seen growth in China slow. They reported that their retail sales over the last year has actually declined. First time since the pandemic that you've seen a decline in retail sales. So the biggest challenge for some of these luxury car manufacturers hasn't necessarily been domestic demand where they're manufacturing, but more what they're selling into China. So really fascinating to watch.
And the other story that we do want to talk about besides cars are chips. And I'm not talking about potato chips.
I love those though.
Yeah, but the fact is that you saw that Tim Cook came out this week and said the new phone is going to be $1,299.
I know. And he said that with the increase or in demand for chips and memory for artificial intelligence, that affects the price that other people pay, even if it's not for artificial intelligence, if it goes into the phone, especially the memory component. I mean, that has just been on a tear lately because of all the memory demands, the amount of data that these data centers need to store and process, that could show up in higher prices for iPhones. And so he announced that it's unsustainable as far as the increase without them being able to pass it on to consumers. Now, they hopefully have enough of a buffer built in to the supply chain, maybe their margins where they can dampen what gets passed on to the consumer. But I'm kind of regretting that I didn't upgrade. I mean, my phone is more than 5 years old, and I was thinking this is the year that I might actually upgrade.
Well, you upgraded from that bag phone just the other day,
so that
wasn't bad. But, you know, you think about to pay for these things, you could have bought Micron and NVIDIA and AMD, these chip stocks. They have continued their rally, and we don't see there's continued demand for years to come.
Yeah, that's just it. It's like it used to be that these were very cyclical, where they'd have boom bust cycles, but it feels as though it's almost like the structural growth that they're having. Now, obviously, it will fade at some point. They're probably going to have some competition, just like President Trump announced that Intel is going to start making some chips for Apple in terms of in the United States at some of these fabrication plants. So some competition with like TSMC, the other manufacturers. So maybe maybe there's going to be some competition, but it takes a long time to stand up some of these factories to bring in that competition. And I love how you said, well, maybe one way to kind of hedge that cost with a new phone is to invest in those stocks. My brother, when he got his first car, it was his first new car, he's like, man, I should purchase stock in Exxon, because that way, if gas prices go up, I'm paying more, but at least my portfolio would go up too.
I hope he bought a lot of Exxon. It depends when that was. The last thing I do want to talk about is there's a little beef happening between the Federal Reserve banks, the one in Europe and the one here, and they're kind of on divergent paths at the moment.
Yeah, it was interesting how a couple of weeks ago, the European Central Bank decided to hike rates. And you've probably felt this as well. I know, where there's some uncertainty, you don't know how it's going to resolve, and you have to make a decision. But if you knew then what you know now, you probably would have made a different decision. And is that the position the European Central Bank is now finding itself in?
Right.
They hiked rates expecting that the Strait of Hormuz was going to stay closed.
They likely made a strategic error.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they've done this before.
Right.
Now, will they reverse course? So this past week, we had the Bank of England. They voted 7-2 to keep interest rates constant. And they kind of made it clear that if they had met a week earlier, they probably would have ended up making that same mistake.
And the reason why I bring it up is because if there is a new Fed and they are going to start using these econometric models to forecast, that is different of saying we now know the facts and circumstances and looking in the rearview mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want to look forward, you have the opportunity to be wrong.
That's right.
And so these are the things that we're going to have to look at. It's going to make our job a little bit more difficult, I think. But if you're listening to the show today and you want to get a better view of how all of the things that we're talking about can help our listeners, how would you do that?
Well, I would sit down and take a look at the portfolio, take that longer term view, because sometimes the mistakes cancel out over time, right? They overestimate, then they underestimate. And so maybe just the passage of time. So it's taking that strategic view, that longer term view. But when we're looking at portfolios, we have tools where we can do stress testing, do this what we call scenario analysis, just looking back as far as, well, what if or what did happen historically to this type of allocation during the global financial crisis, during when Russia invaded Ukraine. And now we're going to have another stress test we can put on there as far as with the U.S.-Israel-Iran conflict, right? So doing these stress tests can, I think, be very valuable for maybe getting a little bit of comfort about how you should have a position portfolio for the long term.
Another episode of Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. The podcast is ready right now on the radio station website, or you can search Annex Money Talk. For Dave Spano and Dr. Brian Jacobson, I'm Joe Krause. Have a great week. Join us again next Saturday at 10 a.m. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Advice and opinions expressed during Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, are solely that of the hosts or guests of Annex Wealth Management and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.